When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil, corner, llegó el gol de Olivier Giroud, marca el Arsenal, marca Olivier Giroud, gol de los Gunners.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you? We've read via the blog that you've been under the weather.
I'm feeling a little bit better, but still like about 60%, because most of what was inside my body came out, apart from my organs and other bits, entrails and gizzards. Everything else came out via one end or the other. So,
crikey.
Yeah.
I mean, some people pay for that privilege, don't they? You know, they have irrigation and things like that.
I did weigh myself and I've lost 1.5 kilos, but I would not recommend it as a weight loss program. I would say to someone who's looking to lose weight, exercise, eat better, you know, up the cardio, that kind of thing. And puking the weight off is not good.
It's not ideal.
No.
Okay. Well, someone should let Colo Touré know. That's not the way forward.
It is definitely not. I'm feeling a bit better. Thank you. Still a bit croaky of voice because of my throat is very sore from all the, you know, the last thing I ate, I don't want to make this disgusting to start off with, the last thing I ate on Friday was peanuts, and they sort of, I don't know, they tore a bit of my throat off, I think, as they were coming back up, so.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, unpleasant. So my voice is not really what it was. How are things with you?
I'm good. I can't complain. A bit achy. My body's sort of beginning to ache in places that I didn't know. Well, in fact, I probably don't have muscles there. That's probably why it aches. But other than that, all well, thank you. So from your sick bed, were you able to watch the football? What was the situation?
Yes. By the time the match had started at, 5:30, I think I'd had something like 2 hours sleep in the previous 48 hours. So it was all a bit surreal. The whole of Saturday was this kind of weird, surreal experience where I was just feeling terrible and waiting for the Arsenal game to start. Well, I mean, I can't say it made me feel a whole lot better.
No.
Not really. But, you know, again, when you step back at it and look at it objectively in the context of one game, I don't think it was that bad, though, was it?
No. I mean, I would say that in isolation, a point away to champions, you know, is not a particularly bad point. And nor is a clean sheet any bad thing, given that we shipped 4 goals in the preceding fixture. So if your glass was at least half full, I think that's what you would take out of it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think there were some things to enjoy about the performance. I mean, certainly defensively, it was great that we managed to defend. I was very impressed by that little bit of progression we made from the game against Liverpool.
A significant change.
Yes. Yeah. The return of Laurent Koscielny, very important in that as well. He obviously adds experience and real quality to the centre of the defence, and he was absolutely outstanding. And I think in some ways he, I won't say necessarily took Rob Holding under his wing, but I think when you've got somebody of that quality beside you and that kind of assurance beside you, it helps you as a younger player play much better.
I think so, and I think there were several interventions from Koscielny that probably enabled us to keep that clean sheet. I mean, obviously there was the penalty appeal in the first half where it looked like he got a boot to the ball, outstretched boot. And then in the second half he made a very good block from Vardy. I thought, you know, we saw basically what we'd missed against Liverpool and why, you know, Arsenal had to rush him back to the KC Stadium, because he's so much better than what else we have. What did you... What did you make of the decision to start with Holding ahead of Chambers? I must say I was a little surprised by that myself.
I was a little as well. I think it probably tells us something about how the manager views his pecking order right at this moment in time. I think it probably says something for Callum Chambers' future at the club at the moment as well. I do wonder perhaps if there was an element of the manager... I don't know if he would just use a player because he's a new player, but maybe he just felt Koscielny and Holding was a better mix. I thought it was a very interesting decision, and one that was very much justified as well by the performance of Holding, who was, I thought, impressive. Now, I know we talked about having Koscielny alongside him and the whole thing about a rising tide lifting all boats, etc. But it was a really good performance from him. And obviously the manager was keen to praise that in the press conference afterwards. We can maybe touch on that a little bit later on. But yeah, I thought there's something you can read into that kind of a decision because Callum Chambers obviously is more experienced at Premier League level. He's a £16 million player bought 2 summers ago, you know, into his third season now at Arsenal, and he's finding himself on the bench behind a 20-year-old who's just come in from Bolton. So it either speaks to what the manager thinks about Callum Chambers or the quality that the manager sees in Rob Holding or something in the middle.
Yes, I think it tells us a little bit about Chambers and about Holding, basically. I was really surprised. I thought Chambers would start just purely based on the fact he's got more Premier League experience under his belt, albeit somewhat limited at Arsenal. But the fact that he went with Holding, I think, shows the faith he has in him. As, to be fair, do his post-match comments. I mean, he was vociferous in his praise of Holding's performance. He may have been trying to make a slightly different point.
Yeah, I think he was.
And I think your point about balance maybe is a thing. You know, maybe he feels Koscielny and Holding has some of the kind of equilibrium that Koscielny and Mertesacker has had in the past. I don't know. But very impressed with the young man. And, you know, for all our transfer window woes, he does appear at this very early stage to be an astute purchase.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his stats from the game. Tackles, he won 1 out of 2 tackles, but 7 out of 9 clearances made, 5 out of 7 headed clearances. He won 5 of his 7 aerial duels. Passing a little bit suspect, maybe, only 74% passing. I think we were used to the centre-halves being a little more accurate than that. Some of his long passing wasn't great, and the short passing, 38 out of 48. But, I mean, you know, this is a 20-year-old who's just coming in to a new team, a team that isn't necessarily playing that well anyway. I think just defensively, if you look at the way he slotted in alongside Koscielny, there was a lot to like about that. The other team selection issue that we should really touch on is a first start for Granit Xhaka. What did you make of him?
Yeah, I thought he was decent enough. I mean, he didn't do anything that massively surprised me. You know, I'd watched him a bit in the Euros, and this was kind of the sort of level of performance I was expecting. I thought it was interesting that he decided to bring Xhaka in alongside Coquelin and Holding too. It struck me that all those players are actually pretty decent in the air, and maybe there was something there where he thought Leicester might look for more long balls or look to be a threat on set pieces. So I wonder if that was a consideration. But yeah, I thought Xhaka was solid, but if not particularly spectacular. What was your impression?
Pretty much the same. I think he looked a little bit unsure of his surroundings at times. You know, it'll obviously take him time to get onto the same wavelength as his teammates. He's got to understand the way that they play. I was a little bit surprised that he went with Coquelin rather than Elneny. I thought perhaps Xhaka and Elneny is a combo that just would seem to fit a little bit better. But Arsene Wenger seems quite wedded to Coquelin at this moment in time. And I thought Coquelin was all right, to be honest. I have to admit, shitting myself when he got away with that yellow card, or what might have been a second yellow card on Mahrez. You know, it was one of those where I thought Mahrez made a bit of a big deal of it because he knew Coquelin was on a yellow card. And to be fair to the referee, he didn't pull the card out. But, you know, it was walking a tightrope a little bit. But Arsene Wenger seems to trust Coquelin, certainly since the game against Tottenham last year. I remember where he made that stupid tackle and got sent off. That he obviously trusts him to have learned a lesson from that, because pretty much everybody when I was watching the game on my Twitter feed was going, take him off, get him off. Not that that makes any difference to anything, but if Arsene Wenger had shared those concerns, considering he had Elneny on the bench or he had Jack Wilshere, who he brought on, he could easily have brought on Wilshere for Coquelin and left Xhaka on. You know, he obviously trusts him in that regard, but I was a little bit surprised that it was Coquelin and Xhaka rather than Elneny and Xhaka.
Yeah, I mean, Coquelin and Xhaka, it strikes me as a bit of a time bomb as far as the officials are concerned. I mean, you know, they would pick up an awful lot of bookings, those two.
Mm.
I thought Coquelin might struggle for game time this season after dropping out of contention a little bit at the back end of the preceding campaign.
Mm.
But you're right, Arsenal seems to have renewed its faith in him over the course of the summer. And obviously with Aaron Ramsey now out for a few weeks, he's got a little chance to establish himself in there.
Mm, yeah, but again, it was one of those games, wasn't it, where a lot of it was played in midfield. There wasn't a great deal of space behind either defence, because obviously Leicester had pace with Mahrez and Vardy, and we had a lot of pace with Oxlade-Chamberlain, Walcott and Sanchez, and we know that the Leicester defence isn't necessarily the quickest, so they weren't leaving any space in behind. Arsenal weren't leaving any space in behind for Vardy to run into, and it just meant that the game was played sort of 60% in the middle of the park, and it was pretty dull, I thought, in general. It was fairly routine stuff, you know. There wasn't anything to excite fans from either side, really.
Well, I think, you know, Leicester, let's not forget, like Arsenal, had suffered defeat in their opening game.
Yeah.
And it looked a little bit cagey, didn't it? It looked a bit like two sides who thought, well, a point will do here, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Neither of them are going to give anything away by being stupid. So what about our forward trio then? I mean, if we talk about the defences sitting deep, is that something we need to take into consideration when we analyse the performances? Because I thought there was not a lot missing, but there wasn't a lot going on in the final third from an Arsenal point of view. There wasn't much going on from a Leicester point of view either. So, I mean, were we looking at the two defences cancelling out the attacks, or should we have concerns about the way that the team is set up to attack?
I think a little bit of both, in that, you know, you're right, the defence was deep, and that doesn't play into the hands of the likes of Walcott and Alexis, who are going to look to run in behind where possible. But in the first game, the Liverpool match, we managed to score three goals, but the defending was diabolical. The defending was better this time around, but the attacking didn't do much to excite.
Mm.
And I couldn't help but look at, you know, the options we had on the field and on the bench, and still think we are very short in that department. And I'm a little bit perturbed about Arsene Wenger, you know, on the eve of the Leicester game, speaking with such force about how he believes Alexis can be a central striker. You know, we heard exactly the same thing about Alexis 2 years ago. Then he ended up, you know, flourishing on the wing rather than through the middle. Then last season we heard Theo Walcott discussed in those terms. That didn't really come to pass. And I can't help but feel that these internal solutions, you know, they're nothing actually that new. We've seen them tried before and not really succeeded. So that is a big concern for me.
Isn't another concern the fact that we're trying to redeploy a player who in his debut season was fucking brilliant, playing down the left-hand side and scored 25 goals in his first season with the club? I mean, that to me is like, okay, I know we're short of options, but like, that works. Alexis works from the left-hand side. I know there are reasons why his form was out the window a little bit last season, but it just strikes me that trying to turn him into a striker, it's only being done because we don't have anybody else at this moment in time. Not because Arsene Wenger thinks this is the right thing to do for either Arsenal or for Alexis Sanchez as a player. Right, it's because we're desperately short of options. We don't have anybody to play striker because Giroud is coming back. Welbeck is injured. Walcott's unconvincing. Joel Campbell is gone. Chuba Akpom probably not ready. So we're using Alexis there because it's really the only choice that we have, not because it's some master plan. But I think as well, what we're looking at is when you do that, you're stripping the team of a potentially 20 to 25 goal a season wide man, which is something that we've been crying out for so long, and we had it in his first season. So why not concentrate on trying to get Alexis back to the Alexis that he was in his first season with Arsenal, and, you know, do something different from the striking point of view? That would be my thinking. I mean, that's where I would have more concerns. Because there's nobody else in the squad, is there, who's going to get 20, 25 goals from a wide position? Is Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain going to get that from the left? I don't think so.
No, and I think for all the excitement and understandable excitement about Alex Iwobi, I think it would be kind of ludicrous and unfair to expect that from him in what would be his first full season. So, yeah, you're right. By shifting Alexis inside, you're actually weakening another area of the park. I also just fundamentally think it doesn't suit his game that well. You know, ultimately he is someone who's attracted to the ball, who's attracted to the action, who, you know, against Leicester you saw that, he wanted to drop deep, he wanted to drop wide. If you look at his heat map, it's pretty much all based out on the flanks.
Right.
And I think that that's his inclination. I'm not sure he's got the kind of tactical discipline, the strategic mind to not come and get involved in the play, to hang on the last man, you know, like a centre forward needs to do. So I'm not convinced by that. I know it's only two games so far, but I still feel that, you know, we started the summer needing a striker, and nothing that's come to pass between then and now changes that.
I totally agree. I think we badly need a striker. I think the attacking display against Leicester was more evidence of that. The options that we had or the players that we were able to bring on from the bench, Olivier Giroud came on and got little or no service. We'd spent some of the game putting in crosses for Alexis that he was never going to get to. And the minute Giroud came on, there was none of that. Mesut Ozil came on, we looked better. This weird thing that when you bring on really good players, your team plays better football. I don't know if anybody's thought to do anything about that or try and base a strategy around
something
that.
We'll never fully understand, yeah. I expect.
Exactly. But I think, it comes back down to the fact that we still need something new, something different, and something improved in our forward line. And to me, if we had an Alexis firing on all cylinders on the left-hand side, we had two good strikers, let's say Giroud and a new signing, who can compete and who can drive each other on in the centre-forward position. And then you do have options on the right-hand side. You can use Iwobi, you can use Walcott, you can use Oxlade-Chamberlain. You know, there are options for you on the right-hand side, which maybe aren't as convincing. But when you've solidified the left-hand side, when you've solidified the central striking position, then perhaps your team can attack with a bit more of a flourish or a bit more rhythm. You know, there just doesn't seem to be any... Like, none of the front three players seem to be on the same wavelength at all. Like you say, Alexis is dropping out left to pick up the ball, play a few triangles, and then you look up and there's nobody in the area. Walcott, Oxlade-Chamberlain, again, sort of individualists rather than players who are really driving the team on in any way. I mean, one thing that concerns me is when you've got two players on the right-hand side, Hector Bellerin and Theo Walcott, who have such an abundance of pace, the complete lack of relationship between them, I think, is a little bit of a concern as well. You'd be looking, going, holy shit, we've got so much pace down the right-hand side, let's try and use that in some way. But they don't seem to click in any way for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's funny, if you look at the front four, you know, if you include Ozil in that and then the two wide men, the centre forward, you would want Ozil in there, you would want Alexis in there. Giroud obviously is a contender for that centre forward role, but there is still two positions there where you feel like there's potential for a significant upgrade. I'm not convinced by Walcott on the right-hand side at all, and I thought his performance was one of the disappointments probably.
Against Leicester.
Yeah.
I think from an attacking point of view, yeah, there was a moment late in the game when he could have played in Giroud and he chose to like push it outside and take a shot, which was always going to be blocked. You know, I think maybe I'm just used to different things, but I thought he actually worked quite hard. I mean, he was toothless, but maybe by the Theo Walcott standards, where he doesn't necessarily put it in the defensive shift, I don't think he could be accused of shirking that. And he did actually work a little bit hard. But yeah, I mean, just from an overall point of view.
I thought with the ball at his feet, I thought he wasn't particularly effective. I thought there were a few sort of strange decisions. But, I recall a performance, I think it was at Leicester a couple of years ago, where we played, was it with Sanogo? Or at least Sanogo was involved.
Yeah.
And it was actually so blunt from an attacking point of view that it prompted Arsene Wenger to go out and buy Danny Welbeck in the next few days, just before the end of the transfer window.
Yeah.
I guess, call me a crazed optimist, but I'm hopeful that this blunt performance at Leicester might produce something similar. But I mean, one of the most fascinating things about this week has been the comments of Arsene Wenger, both in the build-up to the Leicester game and after the Leicester game. And they don't fill me with masses of confidence as regards the transfer market.
Okay, so go into a bit more detail on that. What exactly are you talking about?
Well, I mean, obviously, prior to the Leicester match, I mentioned the comments about playing Alexis centre-forward, but he also cited, you know, Chuba Akpom, he cited Yaya Sanogo as potential options. It feels like on the attacking front, maybe there's a tacit admission that, you know, there have been quotes like, we are struggling to find the players that we want or that we need.
Mm.
I wonder if there is a tacit admission there that maybe that's an area where we're not going to be able to get somebody. And obviously after the game, Arsene was particularly prickly, I guess, with the press about spending money. I think the fans obviously had been calling for money to be spent during the game, and that had riled him up, and he was speaking about Rob Holding and how he deserved more credit, but he didn't, because he didn't cost 50 million, you know, nobody cares about him. Which I think there's a certain truth to that, but I don't think it's the Arsenal fans who are critical of Holding. I think they're delighted that they've got Holding for a good price. I do think sports have a greater appreciation of the quality of a player, maybe sometimes than the manager suspects. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean, I think as ever with Arsene Wenger, there's a lot of sense to some of the stuff that he says, but then there are just these pearls in there that make you go, look, nobody's saying that. Like, I thought what he was saying to the journalist, you know, about being reluctant to spend money, he says to him, well, if I buy you for £45 million, have I done well? No, because I've just bought a fucking journalist for 45 million. It's not spending how much you spend that's really the issue. It's the quality of the player that you bring in, right? I don't think anybody has ever argued against that, though. Nobody, no Arsenal fan is critical of Rob Holding because he only costs £2.5 million. I do think it's a little bit much, though, to hold up a guy like Rob Holding, who's only played his second game, as an example of... I just wonder if that puts a bit too much pressure on somebody like Rob Holding. Like, maybe he's well able to cope, but you know what I mean? It seems a little bit unfair to say, look at this guy that I got for £2.5 million. He's absolutely great. But look, he's only just starting his career. If after 50 games or 100 games and Rob Holding is like steaming his way to being an England international and has really established himself as a player, by all means, use that as an example, but not after two games. I thought that was a little bit much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially because the likes of Callum Chambers have slightly suffered in the past by being a little talked up or overhyped.
Well,
I mean?
Think back to like this time 2 years ago when Callum Chambers had first come into the side, and everyone was thinking, "Oh, wow, this guy's great." You know, he had a really good preseason. He got stuck in. We liked his tackling. We liked the fact that he would make fouls, if you remember. And then, hang on, I'm just want to go down. When was it? Bum 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 bum. It was November. It was November 2014 when he got roasted by Jefferson Montero. All right. So up until November, people were going, this Chambers lad is a good player. We've done well here. 16 million. I know it's a bit much, but like, he looks like the real deal. And then all of a sudden he has this one performance which knocks him for six and knocks the confidence of the manager in him for six. And, you know, things change very quickly. So that's why I was, a little bit concerned about that when he's talking about Rob Holding. It was a bit of a straw man. There was no need to bring that up in that context. You know, I get that he's irritated by questions about spending money. And, you know, he says, I'll spend £300 million if I find the player and I have £300 million. And I don't doubt that, that if he does find the right player, he's prepared to spend what it takes. But it's this, how do you judge with Arsene Wenger what is the right player? Right? How do you judge that? Based on some of the players that we've bought down the years, how do you stand over that when you've brought in players like Gervinho or Andre Santos or Park Chu-young, right? Mm. And what I would say in terms of those transfers is that when we had less money to spend, it was probably more important to get the rightness of the player than it is right now. I'm not saying we should go and waste money or take unnecessary risks, but it is possible to be a little bit more fluid in our terms, in the boundaries of what is and isn't the right player when we have more money to spend. Because when you've only got a limited amount, you have to be absolutely correct. We don't have, I'm not saying we don't have a limited amount, but the amount we have is huge in relation to what it was a couple of years ago. So we can afford to take a little bit more of a risk. So it's the ever-changing sands of what constitutes the right player. I don't get it.
No, I don't really either. And I think we've talked about it before as a kind of Goldilocks effect of looking for the perfect player. I mean, look at the Mustafi case at the moment. It seems that he's been identified as the right man, and yet there's dithering, there's haggling, it's dragging on. And everything you hear from inside the club is about Arsene Wenger's indecisiveness. You know, the agents almost roll their eyes at interest at Arsenal because they know it will get pursued to a certain point, and then Arsene will delay or change his mind or shift targets, and it happens time and time and time again. And there's a lack of conviction in the way they do business. And ultimately, are we saying if we can't bring in the right player, are we saying the guys that we have are the right players? Does that mean Alexis Sanchez is the right player at centre forward? I'm not necessarily convinced it does.
Yeah.
So I think it's more about trying to find superior options than the perfect option.
Sure. But I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it, of buying players, is to improve your squad. I mean, continuously saying you only want players who can improve your squad. Well, of course, that's the whole point. But, you know, sometimes somebody who comes from the outside improves your squad just by being there, because your squad is short and because it needs options, you know?
Absolutely. One of the comments I found most strange, I mean, it's a valid point, but it was the one about, you know, first we need to think about, we're a club of 600 employees and we need to, you know, make sure we have our responsibilities there. I understand the point he's making about this isn't just a billionaire's plaything. You know, there are budgets, but I think as someone who was kind of sold that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, the dream of, oh, we can do things that excite you by even Gazidis, to now hear people talking about we've got to pay our 600 employees and make sure everyone's all right, I'm a bit like, oh, come on. I get frustrated at the lack of ambition in the rhetoric around the club at times.
Mm. Well, I mean, frankly, that comment was a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
It really was. It's completely irrelevant to anything. Nobody is saying that we should go and spend every single penny that the club has, every single bit of the club's payroll, just to bring in a striker and, like, oh, next week, you know, we can let the catering staff and the marketing staff and every other bit of, you know, staff that we have, we'll worry about them afterwards. Nobody is saying that. The other thing is that there are clear lines between what the club has budgeted for transfers and bringing in new players, player purchases and wages, and its operating costs in general. So there was, you know, there's absolutely no need to make that comment whatsoever. You know, as just pure distraction, a complete straw man argument that you know, he sort of uses to preach this sort of fiscal responsibility, which is, you know, is fine, but nobody is saying otherwise. Nobody is saying that he should do what he's saying he's not going to do.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you're absolutely right. It's bizarre. It is so reactionary. You know, no one's asking him to bankrupt the club.
Mm.
They just want him to improve the squad. And those two things, you know, are separate.
Exactly.
And are distinct.
I think, you know, and I'll stand to be corrected here. And if anyone wants to take me to task on this, please feel free. Because I can only speak for myself. But I suspect the wide feeling amongst Arsenal fans is all they want the club to do is use the resources they have and they've worked really hard for and sacrificed a lot over the years by building the new stadium, by coming through a period of financial, you know, austerity, everything else. All people want is for them to use what they have at their disposal. The reason they worked hard to build a new stadium is to have this money to improve the team. Is that not the end game? Was that not the whole fucking point of building a new stadium, of generating these new revenue streams, of increasing our commercial deals, was so that we would have more money to buy better players, to make a better team, so we would be more successful on the pitch. Am I wrong?
Answer, people. Shout back.
I mean, I can't see that, you know, that is all people want. They don't want fucking 100 million on Pogba. I mean, it would be great, but you know, that's not what anybody is screaming for. All anybody wants is for the club just to do its best with what it has. And, you know, we don't want you to live outside your means, but stop living within your means.
I mean, absolutely. And I think, you know, fans obviously in various ways support the club or put money into the club. And I think, obviously, that only increases and exacerbates the frustration, doesn't it? When you're, you know, particularly those who are at the Leicester game, paying for tickets or what have you, they're, you know, might be season ticket holders back at home. When they do chant, spend some money, it's because they think, well, we're continuing to invest in this club in a way, and that it's not being reflected in the way the club operates. It's really, really maddening. But I think that at this stage of the window, it's almost less about the philosophical discussion. That's almost more a discussion that is suitable at the start of the transfer window, at the outset, when plans are being made. But at this stage, it's a mad, you know, kick bollock scramble now to get things done, right? Because what are we, less than 10 days away from the closure of the window? And I think we've left ourselves with an absolutely enormous amount to do.
Yeah. What did you make of the comment about how fans looking for the club to spend money were highly influenced by the media? On the Arsenal website, they transcribed that from the press conference. It said, "We are highly influenced by the media." So that's part of the process today. But he quite specifically said, "They are highly influenced by the media." So that's part of the process today. That's the one that got to me more than anything else, to be perfectly honest. You know, I mean, there's obviously an element of truth in that, because you know what we could do? Like right now, I could write a story on Arseblog News, and I could write a headline that says, "Manager says Arsenal fans are silly twats," right? And I could publish that, but in the body of the article, I could write, I don't know, "Bob Manager 23 from Essex says that Arsenal fans are silly twats," right? But what will happen is people will look at the headline and go ballistic. Simply, you know, when it goes out there, they go, "Oh my God, can be called a silly twat." So there is a certain element of that. But I think people are far more influenced by what they see on the pitch and what they see the club do. And the other side of that is, I think a lot of the media take their cues from fans these days, particularly the print media, who've got all day to monitor what's going on social media and then regenerate those stories into something the next day.
Yes, I think that's it. I mean, obviously, we're all influenced by the media. I mean, that's sort of a given. But if Arsene believes that the media are leading some kind of conspiracy against him, and that the fans are sort of suckers into that, I think he's living in a fantasy, really. I mean, I just don't look, as one of those fans, I find it a bit insulting, really, to suggest that our views are just so purely coloured by, you know, reporting or tabloid reporting or whatever. I think that it doesn't take, if you strip the media away, it's not as if we're winning everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not as if we're just watching what happens on the field, we wouldn't have concerns about the strength of the side. I wouldn't arrive at those concerns without, you know, the performances being through the prism of the media.
Yeah.
People make their own judgments as well based on their eyes. And he's right, the media are hugely influential in the way football is discussed in this country. But I think what's more influential, often the media agenda is governed by what the fans are saying, which is their own opinion.
Absolutely. You know? And for the most part, that comes by what they see on the pitch and what they see happening off the pitch, and, you know, things that the club say, by their own admission, Arsenal have said that they need a striker and they need central defender. They've said they're working hard to bring in players that we need. So that message of needing players isn't coming from the media. It's not just the media saying that. It's not just the media influencing fans into thinking that we need new players. A, the club have said it. B, the fans know it anyway. And C, the media like lag way behind. They're only feeding off the other two things. So it's very strange. I don't know what he was thinking there when he said that, to be perfectly honest, because it was quite a statement that might be considered divisive. And, you know, he's generally always, you know, he's tried not to do that in certain ways because he understands the need to have the fans on side and behind the team. You know, when, excuse me, when people talk about, let's say, a poor atmosphere at the Emirates, he'll talk about, well, it's not the fans' fault. It's up to the team to inspire the players or to inspire the fans, rather, I should say, you know. So I thought that was a little bit out of character.
Yeah, I think you're right as well that it's not us who, well, Arsenal fans do know we need a striker because, as I say, people can make their own conclusions based on what happens on the field. But it's Arsene and the club who went out and bid for Jamie Vardy. You know, that is the admission there that we need a forward. You can see it. So to now claim that we don't feels like a very strange climb down, you know. So I thought it was... I mean, I hope it's not indicative of the way this season's going to go because you do feel like the divisions between the manager and the fans deepen, you know, by the month. And with so much at stake this season, with it being the last year of his contract, I feel like there's potential for that to get kind of uglier and uglier, really, which worries me.
Yeah, it is a bit of a worry. You know, there was a video went around after the final whistle at the Leicester game, and there were not an insignificant number of fans singing about wanting Arsene Wenger out. And, you know, coming from the away fans who do it through thick and thin, I think that says a lot.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, they're incredibly loyal, a lot of those travelling fans. So I think as a kind of, you know, bellwether of fan opinion, that's... a troubling one, definitely.
All right, well, look, still a point on the board, that's good. Clean sheet, that's good. And now we go to Watford away on Saturday. We'll have to wait and see.
A point on the window, but... A point on the window? A point on the board, but five points off some clubs already. I mean, that's, you know, that's the way it goes, I guess. You always worry, Jose Mourinho teams, they're fast starters, aren't they?
They sure are.
They run from the front.
All right, well, look, we're going to take a break. We're going to cover Joel Campbell. We're going to cover all the other bits and pieces in your questions and more right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arseblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog. But before we get into them, James, some big news. Should we start spreading the news?
Ah, lovely.
Nice.
Lovely work. Let's start spreading the news. We're leaving in September.
Yes, at the end of September, we are going to be doing a live Arscast Extra in New York City.
The Big Apple. Biggest Apple I've ever seen. I'm very excited, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's the weekend of the Chelsea game, so we're likely to have plenty to talk about.
Is it home or away, that Chelsea game? I mean, obviously, we're away. We're in New York.
Yeah, we're going to be away. I'm just going to have a look here now. We should know this.
I know. Well, it's at home. So we've got a puncher's chance.
Yeah.
But yeah, incredibly exciting. So what have you got the details to add?
Yeah, we are going to be over there. Obviously, we'll be watching the Arsenal-Chelsea game in a bar called Barleycorn in New York City. Which is the newest bar for the Arsenal NYC group. You can find out more details about them, if you're not already aware, on their Facebook page, facebook.com/ArsenalNYC. So we'll be there. What time is the game kicking off, actually?
It's a 5:30. It's a 5:30. In British time.
Okay, so that's a 12:30 New York time kickoff. Mm-hmm. All right, nice lunchtime kickoff. Few afternoon beers. Watch the game.
Yeah, lovely. Perfect timing.
Be absolutely fucking shit-faced and home in bed by 7 o'clock that evening. So we'll be watching the game, but then on Sunday the 25th, the evening of Sunday the 25th, we are going to be doing a live podcast from the bar, talking about the game, doing all the usual bits and pieces with the questions and the answers and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, we'll see if we can find some people to come and join us, will we?
Yeah, hopefully. That'd be lovely.
That'd be great. So, yeah, I don't know what the details are regarding admission and everything else, but Arsenal NYC will have all the information that you need, facebook.com/ArsenalNYC. And, of course, we'll update on the ArsBlog Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/TheArsBlog. But that's going to be quite cool.
It's going to be very cool indeed.
Yeah.
Sorry, London, we've got bigger fish to fry.
But we'll be back, London, don't you worry.
No, don't you worry. We will return.
We will.
Unless there's a terrible mishap.
So, Jesus Christ.
Well, you're travelling with me. I mean, anything could happen.
I'm not travelling with you. I'm meeting you there. I was very clear about this a few weeks ago.
Right.
If we ever have to go anywhere, it'll be, I'll see you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not getting on a plane with me on it. That's very, very sensible. Right, shall we get some questions?
Yes, let's do questions.
Well, let's start with Joel Campbell.
Okay.
I've got one here from at Marky249 who says, do you think we should have loaned out Arsene Wenger and kept Joel Campbell? And then Andrew Dickens asks, do you think Campbell's loan signals A, a big signing, B, Gnabry in the first team, or C, the end of days?
B, I think it's to do with making space in the squad for Serge Gnabry, to be perfectly honest. I mean, the Campbell situation is, I mean, nobody is surprised in any way, are they, that he's been sent on loan?
I'm a tiny bit surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised in terms of the fact that it's been quite clear for some time that he wasn't really Arsene's man. But I just thought at a stage where, you know, we're having a discussion about a lack of strength potentially in the attacking department, I am a bit surprised to see him go. But yeah, he's never quite fancied him, has he? That's the thing.
That is it. I mean, regardless of how well he's played, regardless of how hard he's worked, and I think I think Campbell's a good player, and he showed himself to be a good player last season. I don't think he's a brilliant player, but I think he's a player who could have done a job in this squad for this season. I do wonder if Arsene Wenger is taking a bit of a gamble on Serge Gnabry being able to do a bit more than what Campbell did last season if he was given the same amount of playing time. I don't think it's a precursor to a new signing. I just think it's a manager who has never been fully convinced by a player, now sees that he's got an internal solution to take his place in the squad, somebody who he probably believes can be better or who has more potential. And that's what he's done. He didn't include him in the opening day of the season. He didn't include him for the squad yesterday. And it's fairly clear his mind has been made up for quite a while about Joel Campbell. I mean, do you feel like he's been treated unfairly?
I thought he was at stages last season. I always remember that Barcelona game coming round, that home tie, and Campbell had been in and out of the team, but generally performing very well. And then on the night, he was dropped for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who was really disappointing.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, well, that tells us everything we need to know about Campbell's place in the pecking order in Arsene's mind. I think he, and the fact he wasn't involved at the back end of last season at all, really, was surprising given how effective he'd been in the winter months. I'm sorry to see him go, I'll be honest, because, you know, you're right, he's not spectacular, he's not world-class, but he's a very, very solid squad player. And he's, unlike a lot of our attacking players, someone who you can absolutely rely on defensively. They're very diligent. He's very diligent.
Mm.
He tracks back. He likes to tackle. And, you know, he is creative too. I mean, some brilliant passing last season. You'll always remember that assist for Olivier Giroud. Was it in Greece?
Olympiacos, yeah. Fantastic.
Absolutely superb. I mean, he had some great moments like that. And at Anfield in January in that 3-0 draw, I remember him as being outstanding. But, yeah, I mean, he's a player who presumably wants to play every week, and he'll get that opportunity at Sporting.
Mm.
But it seems to me that you're right, and that the performances of Gnabry, particularly at the Olympics, have convinced Arsene to try and find a place for him in the squad. That is a gamble, though. You know, Campbell was to an extent a known quantity.
Mm.
Gnabry, for all his promise, has had a very, very difficult couple of years and hasn't made any kind of impression on the first team for some time. So it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see to what extent he manages to break through. I mean, there might be other players factoring into the manager's thinking too. I mean, obviously there's Alex Iwobi, but Jeff Rennie-Adelaide as well has been promoted to the first team squad and operates in similar parts of the pitch. So maybe that's in the manager's thinking as well. But I'm disappointed, I would say, to see. I'm sorry to see him go.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think what often made him stood out was the difference in attitude between him and some of the players who it feels have been a little bit indulged by Arsene Wenger down the years.
Say a Walcott, for example.
Well, yeah, but you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain to an extent as well. You know, yeah. I want to ask you, when you were watching the game, I'm not going to name the two players, even though we've just spoken about them.
Mm-hmm.
But there were two moments in the second half when both Oxlade-Chamberlain and Walcott didn't go in for 50-50s that they should have. I don't know if anyone else noticed this. There was one, Oxlade-Chamberlain was more in midfield. Walcott's, I can't quite remember where it was, but there was one where Oxlade-Chamberlain looked like if he'd gone for it, he could have really gone in for it. And I do wonder whether that's a consequence of the 50-50 he went into that got himself injured.
Well, exactly.
But, you know, that it's just that having that little bit extra bit of desire, you know, it's moments like that. If you win a 50-50 high up the pitch, that you catch a defence unawares and you can create something, you can make something happen. And Campbell was always willing to do his defensive work. He was always willing to do the running. And I think that made him stand out. Perhaps more than the quality of his football was that he was so at odds with some of the other players in the side it set him apart in some ways. And I think when the team isn't playing well, when you've got a guy whose attitude is absolutely spot on, it's little wonder that, you know, he becomes a favourite. So I think that's playing a part as well.
Yeah, that's probably true. But I think some of those qualities are similar to those that made Francis Coquelin stand out when he came into the side, you know. But he was, I guess he did so in an area of the field where we were that much more desperate, you know, that he became so integral so quickly.
Yeah.
Campbell has some of those qualities, some of that hunger, some of that bite, some of that desire, but is operating in a part of the pitch where Wenger has so many other options that he's kind of been squeezed out. But what I definitely don't think is, I don't feel like this is indicative of I'd love to think it was indicative of an imminent signing, but that's not the impression that I have.
Mm. A couple of sort of extra questions on that. Michael at Euler56 says, Campbell and Chesney have both gone on loan again. Both have no future here. Why can't we sell them, or why won't we sell them?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So, for example, I don't necessarily, in the case of Campbell, I don't really foresee, I don't see this as a move to sort of get him more experience and bring him back.
No.
You know, I feel like he's at a stage now where if Wenger trusted him, he'd be part of the squad.
No, he's absolutely toast, yeah.
Yeah. Why can't we sell him? I mean, I don't know. There's an argument, of course, that because the money in the Premier League is so great and so massive, the wages of the players are now so much higher than those of their European counterparts that it becomes impossible for clubs to match those salaries. So even if, you know, it's going to become an increasing trend where when players move abroad from the Premier League, English clubs might have to keep contributing to them for a salary perspective.
Oh, do you think this could be part of why Arsene Wenger is perhaps reluctant to spend, in the sense that, no, genuinely, that if he's looking at purchases or looking at players that he's going to bring in, he's going to go, okay, well, I'm going to have to pay X million for him. I'm going to have to pay him X million a week because, you know, there's his transfer fee has an impact on the salary that we're going to pay him. If he doesn't work out, who the hell is going to buy him?
Well, this is it. There is this risk of the British market becoming an isolated market because no one on the continent can take your player that you're paying crazy money to in the Premier League off you at that rate. So I do wonder if it's going to become increasingly difficult for Premier League clubs to offload players outside of Britain. Whether that contributes to why we're loaning these players, I don't know. Mm. If it's because we're still paying 20-30% of their wages, I don't know. But I would hazard a guess that that might be part of it.
Right.
Because Campbell signed a contract not too long ago. But I think I would imagine that this deal and the Chesney deal that's mentioned, I would imagine they both have clauses built into them that enable a permanent move being an option. Because the fact that they've been let go on loan suggests that, you know, maybe their future does lie elsewhere.
Mm. Ian Wright, not the Ian Wright, but at IH Wright, asks again about Campbell. Is loaning Campbell now the perfect example to demonstrate Arsene Wenger's tone deafness / disregard for optics, in the sense that Campbell's obviously a very popular player? There's been a backlash to this, but, you know, ultimately he'll do what he wants.
He will, but I mean, I wouldn't necessarily base squad building on, you know, well, the fans will be upset about it. I mean, he's got to do what he thinks is right, even when he's wrong. Yeah, I mean, the backlash is interesting, isn't it? Campbell, a couple of years ago, was a kind of joke figure at the club. And, it's true to say that we would sort of herald his return from loan only to see him depart again without any great impact, you know. But he made a place for himself in the squad. And I think you're right. I think he became a symbol of something. I think his hard-working play and his kind of, underdog spirit almost symbolised something. It became a kind of, he became a symbol of frustration with other players in the squad. Do you know what I mean? He was kind of the fans' choice because they felt that he was there on merit rather than because he'd been indulged.
Yeah, at least if the football is shit, you know, at least this guy's working hard and he's trying his best. Standing there looking at players run past him and stuff.
And fans love that. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, of course fans love that. They want to see players who match their commitment to the club out on the field, or at least it feels like that.
Yeah.
And so I understand why he became a bit of a champion of the fans. I can understand they're frustrated that he's gone. Look, there's a very quick fix and a very easy solution, and it's bringing a superior attacker. But whether or not it happens, we don't know. I mean, look, do you have any, what's your feeling about this last few days of the window? Do you have any optimism at all?
Look.
That's a great Arsene Wenger starting answer. Yeah.
Here's what I think right at this moment in time. I think we are, obviously the start of the season has been really poor. I think that our transfer business has been poor. The key areas of the team remain unaddressed, and there are issues with the way that the team is playing. And I think all of those things, with the clamor that goes with signings and transfers, you know, I don't I'm not suggesting for one moment that we don't need them, but there is like a really intense focus on transfers during the transfer window. People fucking love transfers. They get so invested in the whole thing, and they, you know, and there's good reason for that. But I think at times it goes a little bit loopy as well, right? I think all of that is feeding into this, this negativity, or, you know, it's creating a cloud of negativity around, around the club, which, you know, the club have to take some responsibility for as well, because of the way, you know, basically 1 point from six is a shit start to the season. If we were to sign a couple of good players and things clicked in terms of results and in terms of performances, then I think, you know, we'd start feeling a little bit brighter about things. But like you, I have reservations about what exactly it is that we're going to do, because of what he said, because of what he keeps saying about attracting quality, because of, you know, using examples. We have the other week he was asked about Giroud being missing, and, you know, who else could he play as a striker? Says, we have Alexis, we have Walcott. You know, there doesn't seem to be anything other than lip service paid to the idea that these transfers are really necessary. So at this point, I'm resigned to not very much happening, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I would obviously be delighted if a lot more than that went down. But quite frankly, you know, when you've had a whole summer to do stuff and you haven't done it, I just don't see it happening between now and the end of the window. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being terribly pessimistic here. But just from everything that's happening and everything that's being said and all this talk about money and having to pay 600 employees, I mean, is there a corporate message coming down there? Here's a question. I think it's from Indigo, at Indigo_light. And he goes back to the 600 employees thing. He said, what do you think of the fact that he said this in the exact same words on French and British TV? I mean, could the conspiracy theorists read something into that? Like, are there bigger issues? Is this coming from on high, perhaps? Or is that just trying to find an excuse where there isn't really one?
I think what's more likely is that Arsene sort of came up with the line and, you know, liked it and felt it was smart and an effective way of dealing with these questions.
Yeah.
Maybe it's possible that there's a directive from above, but I'm not sure that there is much above Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, you know, particularly when it comes to the transfer market. I think what's more likely is that he's landed on it and seen it as something he can roll out in different interviews. As discussed, I sort of think it's bullshit. You know, I sort of think it's not relevant.
Yeah.
It actually annoys me a bit because I sort of think, that's just not the situation that's at hand. That's not what's being discussed. No one's saying we shouldn't pay the stewards. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane. But I think the fact that he's rolling it out in different interviews, what that tells us most is that
that's the message he wants to get out?
Exactly. It's what he wants to say. It's his view of the transfer market at the moment and his view of the club's position.
Mm. Yeah, so yeah, my basic feeling is that, you know, I don't think it would take a huge amount to turn things around in terms of what we all think, but when it comes to transfers, I'll be pleasantly surprised. I would be very pleasantly surprised if good players arrive between now and the end of the window, but realistically, or just in my gut, I'm not expecting a lot.
I think, for what it's worth, I think that they will do a centre-back because I think they have to. But I've said that before. I also think they have to do a striker, but I think they won't get that done. So I think it'll be a centre-back and that'll be a lot.
Mm.
Well, we touched on this before, but I'll ask you more directly. Jamie Parker at Parkerino asks, do you feel that the writing is on the wall for Chambers now, as Holding was picked ahead of him?
Yeah, particularly if they do buy a centre-half. Although, there might be room in the squad for him as the backup right-back. I mean, Mathieu Debuchy has not been in the squad for the opening two games. He's definitely not going to be happy about that. He's somebody who I would see leaving the club, probably another loan. I know there are French clubs interested in him, but they can't afford the transfer fee or the wages. I think Bordeaux were talking about that a few weeks back. You know, they'd love to have him back, but just in terms of wages. So he might be another one that we send out. You know, oftentimes a door can be closing on a player and circumstances can open things up. But if Holding stays fit, if we bring in another centre half, if Koscielny stays fit, I mean, I think what's one of the things we've overlooked when talking about Koscielny, I'll come back to this in a minute because I've got a question on it, is Arsene Wenger saying that they travelled with a squad of 19. I don't know who the 19th was to Leicester, but they travelled with a squad
it
of 19.
It was Bielik, actually.
Well, all right, okay. Well, that makes sense then. Yeah. And he said about Koscielny, he had a big back problem yesterday when he came out of training. So, A, there's Koscielny just coming back from his holidays, and B, with a big back problem. And during the game, if you looked at him, he was grimacing quite considerably a number of times. And maybe that's just a physical fitness thing. Maybe that's, you know, not being quite up to speed in terms of match fitness. And he obviously put in a huge amount of effort to play as well as he did. It would be concerning if we had to keep playing him with that kind of a back problem. But I think just the decision to choose Holding over Chambers at this point, again, it's a bit like the Joel Campbell situation. You feel like Arsene Wenger isn't necessarily convinced by Callum Chambers in any one position. He didn't use him very often at centre half last season. He didn't use him very often at right back. He didn't use him very often at all. And I think that tells you as much as you need to know about his future. Now, he could come into the side and play well, but my feeling is that he could be somebody who, if not in this transfer window, probably in January, if injuries and fitness permit, he could be on his way. What do you reckon?
Well, when Holding was signed and Gabriel Mertesacker was still, or at least Holding was being talked about as an option, and Gabriel Mertesacker was still fit, I think we might have said even on the podcast that it looked as if Holding might come in to allow Chambers to go out on loan, you know, and maybe develop that way. Obviously, the subsequent injuries have made that less likely. But yeah, I don't think it looks good for Chambers that he's been kind of superseded by a younger, less experienced player, newer on the scene. I don't think Chambers is a right back, really. I think, you know, what happened with Jefferson Montero would happen to him again. I think his lack of pace is always going to be a problem in that position. I think were it not for the severity of the injury situation, then he probably would be on his way. Most likely on loan, partly because it seems that's the only way we can get rid of players these days.
Yeah.
But also because, you know, the potential remains there. It's just a question of whether or not he's going to get the necessary experience to fulfil it at Arsenal.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, where's my question here? A view of your Arsenal, at a view of your arse, wants to know, do you think Arsene Wenger's decision to hold Koscielny back last week has been vindicated with injuries to others? I think Bakary Sagna, people have said, well, Bakary Sagna played for Man City and Payet played for West Ham and who was the other one? There was somebody else. Hugo Lloris for Tottenham. You know, players who have been brought back straight away have ended up injured. Not all of them, but some of them.
I mean, I guess it's vindicated to an extent, but then on the other side of the coin, it sounds as if Koscielny did pick up a problem, right, in training in the week before, or at least had this back problem. So, I mean, we got away with it, right? It feels like we got away with it with Koscielny.
Yeah.
And we had to. I mean, I think it's what is most vindicated by is the result and the clean sheet, which was a dramatic transformation from how poor we were against Liverpool. But it's not ideal. I mean, I think, you know, Arsene, when do you think he would have liked to have brought Koscielny back in?
Probably not this week either. I think he would have liked to have given him more time. I think if Mertesacker and Gabriel had been fit, I think he would have kept him out a little bit later. I mean, Koscielny himself said, look, we needed the extra week. We only came back to training. We weren't fit, is what he said himself. I mean, we have to take the player at his word. If he didn't feel like he was match fit, and Arsene Wenger was determined to give him the rest, then, you know, the bigger issue, of course, was not strengthening the centre of defence when we knew that Mertesacker was injured, and then we obviously paid for that doubly when Gabriel got injured. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I think the decision was right. I think the manager is criticised time and time again for bringing back players far too quickly. And there's a lot of truth in that. So I don't know that you can criticise him by doing what most people would consider to be the right thing in this sense, yeah?
Yeah, of course. Of course. I think, on balance, we got it just about right. I think it was definitely correct to not play Koscielny against Liverpool. Imagine a serious injury being picked up in that game, the position that would leave us in, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it was probably, on balance, right to bring him back for Leicester, especially given the improvement that we subsequently made.
Yeah. Okay. Your question?
Here's a good question. Question now. Okay, this is from Matthew Osborne, who's at Matty Arse. And he says, Wilfred Bony, available, but is he good enough? Would it add some depth up front?
Yes, it would add some depth up front. And if you'd asked me at the start of the transfer window, would I like Wilfred Bony? I would have said no. I would have said someone better, please. But I think what's happening now, and there's a part of me that wonders if the inability to find players informs the decision to wait longer, so we enter beggars can't be choosers territory. So basically somebody is better than nobody at all. And at this moment in time, he's pretty much one of those, isn't he? It would be better to have him than not have anyone.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
But, you know, it's not necessarily an inspiring signing or one that would make you think, well, this guy's going to make all the difference. I know he had one really great season. Could have been, I'm going to have to look him up here.
A couple of years ago at Swansea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, look, he's being linked with West Ham, who are trying to get him on loan, I think. Slaven Bilic has spoken very positively about him. When he was at Swansea, you know, he was a player that people talked about as a potential Arsenal target, and not in disparaging terms by any stretch. I think, obviously, the fact that he's attempted to make the step up by going to Manchester City, and it hasn't necessarily panned out for him, is what causes the concern. But I think he scored 26 goals in 54 league games for Swansea. I mean, it's a decent record, you know, for a side that weren't any great shakes particularly. But then 6 in 36 appearances for City. So I don't know. What you would say about Bony is he doesn't really fit the mould of kind of, he's no Vardy, is he? He's a very different kind of player.
He's sort of like a shorter, quicker Giroud.
Yeah.
Sort of,
but yeah,
with a kind of Walcottian first touch.
Yeah, he sounds ideal. But no, I think he's not massively, although he's got a little bit of sprint speed, he's not massively mobile. He's a guy who likes to take the ball into feet or into chest or on his head. Very powerful, a very good finisher. But I mean, yeah, we're in that situation where, you know, Danny Welbeck wasn't necessarily the striker everybody desperately wanted us to get, but we needed a striker at that time, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like Boney's kind of in that category of competent Premier League forward who is, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
better than Sanogo.
Better than nobody. I mean, that's, I think, where we are. That's where our expectations have to be. You know, whatever about, super quality or only finding players who can improve us, we're in someone is better than nobody kind of territory right now. And he would certainly be one of the prime someone to be better than nobody candidates out there. I know there have been a few others named. I can't remember who at this point, but
it feels like, you know, if that's going to happen, it will be very late in the day, won't it? It'll be a kind of like, well, there's always this option kind of thing. But would City sanction that? Would they allow that to happen?
Well, if Guardiola doesn't want him, I don't think he'd be Mourinho-esque, would he? And like do the Demba Ba thing on us.
Maybe not.
I mean,
maybe
there's the thing. If we were quite prepared to take Demba Ba on loan a couple of seasons ago, I mean, why the fuck wouldn't we, you know... How do you justify that one? Democrat.
If you said to me, you can have a squad which is the current strikers you've got, or you can have a squad which is the current strikers you've got plus Wilfred Boney, of those two options, I'm taking the second one.
Mm. Yeah.
It doesn't mean that he's the perfect striker or that there's not a better striker out there we could get. But if the choice is him or nobody, it's him. But then that's going to be true in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
I saw Shane Long linked the other day.
I got nothing to say to that. I really don't.
The sights have dropped. I mean, it is crazy, isn't it? You know, we started this summer being like, after years of trying, this has got to be the summer where we get the striker.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
That was the whole agenda, really.
Yeah.
And it's just completely failed to come to. And there wasn't one option. There were about six on the table. You know, we talked about Morata. We talked about Lukaku. More names. Lacazette, Vardy, Batshuayi to an extent.
And yeah.
They've all come and gone. Lukaku announced staying at Everton this weekend. That's another one off the table.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean, so, yeah, I'm like you. If we go into the end of the window and it's Boney or nobody, I'll take him just because I think we need somebody. We definitely need somebody. But it's a bit like wanting to get a bike for Christmas and coming downstairs and seeing a chair with some wheels on it.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, exactly. You're not happy about it, but it's like, right, well, do you want me to take away the chair with the wheels? It's like, I need it.
I'll go to school on my wheelchair wheels. Not like a wheelchair. That makes it sound bad.
But ideally, be like, can I have that chair with wheels on loan? And then if a genuine bike becomes available, say in January or next summer, I could buy that bike then.
Yeah, but then your chair with wheels becomes your longest serving player eventually.
True. Yeah, that's what happens. Eventually they end up as club captain and it's their testimonial.
All right, listen, we're going to almost leave it there, but I've got one final question for you here. This comes from Sid Kahare, I think it is. Sid Kahare or Sid Kahare, 88. And I don't know if you noticed, but Vic Akers was rubbing things on players before they came on. He had to rub something on Olivier Giroud.
Probably a bit of some sort of
like a
muscle wrap?
Yeah, like that kind of thing. But he wants to know, if you had to get Vic Akers to rub something on your body, what would it be and why?
Well, it would be some delicious Hartley's jam. And thanks to the guys at Hartley for my lifetime supply of jam.
Did you get yours yet?
Do you know what? It's been delivered to my home in London, so sadly not.
Right.
Oh, speaking of the product testing, I almost forgot to mention.
What?
My friend Joe McGrath sent me a picture of a special kind of deodorant that he acquired in South America, which has David Ospina.
No way. Yes. David Ospina deodorant.
Yes, it's called Arden for Men, and it's David Ospina deodorante. I'll send you a picture and we can tweet it out. It's extraordinary.
Brilliant.
It's a special Ospina brand of, you know, antiperspirant. And he asked me, I like to keep my antiperspirant in safe hands. I see what he's done there.
Oh.
Which Arsenal player would you want on your deodorant?
Which Arsenal player would I want on my deodorant? I'm trying to think who would be the most fragrant. Like, Jack Wilshere's got a smell of, like, all the links.
Yeah.
Mixed together. And
I
then,
so.
Yeah, that can't. So it wouldn't be Jack Wilshere. I think probably, Santi Cazorla. Just
really?
I feel like there's probably a musk of ham. Often.
Ooh, lovely.
Yeah,
ham
just
on.
A little, yeah, ham on
scent
musk.
Of ham on ruffles.
Yeah, exactly.
Creeping over the air towards you.
Exactly, exactly. You know, he doesn't strike me as a particularly unpleasantly smelling chap. Like, I wouldn't say, like, maybe I'm being mean here, but, you know, I wouldn't like to smell Gabrielle's armpit.
No, fair enough. I would join you in that. I think I'd probably go for Giroud. I just imagine the man smells constantly of, you know, a cocktail of colognes that he applies before he goes on the field.
Yeah.
So for me, I'd want Giroud all over my spray can.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, Ospina branching out.
Wow. Well, I mean, he's got plenty of time on his hands, doesn't he?
Well, exactly. You know, what else is he going to do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what are the big deodorants like? Right Guard.
Right Guard.
Sure for men.
Sure. Yeah.
It won't let you down. Who would be that guy?
What would you want rubbed on yourself, by the way?
It would depend on the circumstances on which it was being rubbed. I mean, is this before I go out onto a football pitch?
You're about to go on the football pitch.
I'm guessing there'll be no other reason for Vic Akers to be smearing me with some kind of lotion or poultice.
Well, who knows? I don't know.
Well, no, there wouldn't be.
Don't know Vic well.
No, there wouldn't be. I'm just saying. That would be, I think it would probably, like, something gross.
Right.
Something like the essence of skunk, if you were going on, because it would be really off-putting to the defenders,
to
wouldn't it?
To keep the markers at bay.
Yeah, exactly. They'd be going, I'm going to get touch tight to this guy.
Or something very slippery, you know? So it's like... They can't get near you.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to grab you now. If you didn't already see Mike Dean giving the penalties for holding in the box, did you see the penalty he gave against Raheem Sterling?
I did actually. Yeah.
What the fuck? Like whatever there about grabbing somebody's arm like Shawcross did, but that Sterling thing. Oh Jesus.
Curious, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Very strange.
Yeah.
I think yes. Okay, some sort of essence of skunk. I think that's a good choice, to be honest. Or you could just rub Gabrielle's sweat all over you.
Yes, Gabrielle's armpit just, you know,
yeah, that would definitely squeeze it out.
It sure would. Okay, well, look, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll be back next Monday where we're going to discuss the Watford game, and then we head into an interlull.
So what's the time? So it goes, the Watford game is on the Saturday, then on the Monday we'll speak, and then... A few days after that is the transfer deadline, right?
It is, I think. Yeah, when's the 31st?
31st is the Wednesday, so you'll be dealing with the aftermath of that on a Friday afternoon.
Yes. Okay, we'll deal with all that.
Dodge a bullet there.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome, Boney.
Yeah.
All right, we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks as ever for listening.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.